Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Study of X. I am your host, Tim, and this is a podcast talking about the X-Men Krakoa era of comics. We're going through those in chronological order. With me, as always, is Chris, a expert first chair trumpet player in the Juilliard, I believe. Juilliard, right?
Yes. Sometimes it is Juilliard, but yes, that works.
And Sergio, also music-related, director of the movie Whiplash.
I did that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was that before or after the sundial?
It was in the middle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just like a side project.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Respectable.
So, Tim, when you say chronological, what definition of chronological are you using here?
Well, you know, it's like loosely chronological, like.
Okay.
It's like chronological in universe.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I don't know about that.
it's more chronological than the release order, because that throws things very much out of order.
Yeah, the release order is a little bit weird, especially around COVID times. Although, depending on how long we stick with this, we might end up going into release order. But that's a conversation for much later.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we will. But yeah, so we got a couple issues here. 7 and 8 of X-Force and Giant Size X-Men, Jean Grey and Emma Frost.
Yes, and I'm excited to talk about all of these. Honestly, I actually really like these two issues of X-Force.
Yeah, we've got a pretty self-contained Domino mini arc.
Yeah.
Domino's Wild Goose Chase.
Yeah, you know, just doing some gallivanting across the world.
Uh-huh, being pretty effective at it, all things considered.
Yeah.
Yeah, considering her situation, she's doing really good.
Yeah.
I was going to say, speaking of that, do we want to get into it?
Yes, absolutely.
Yep, let's go.
All right. So we are opening up with X-Force number 7, Domino Has Fallen, written still by Benjamin Percy, and this one was released in February of 2020. We're opening up here with a couple of incredible odds-defying lucky kill shots. All centered around pretty pro-mutant individuals. A businessman, a pro-mutant journalist, pro-mutant politician. All of them are killed in very, very lucky ways.
This is just some, like, hitman, like, nonsense kills here.
Absolutely. I'm not sure which one's my favorite. It's either the one where the bullet goes through the pizza guy and the journalist, or it's the one in Tokyo where it's just right over the manhole cover. Both of them are very good.
I'm a big fan of the pizza one myself.
Have either of you heard of Golgo 13?
Yeah, I have. It's been so long. I have watched, I believe, that OVA before.
I can't,
because this
say
is
I
the exact kind of bullshit he's always up to.
Yeah.
So Golgo 13 is a pretty classic, like, manga and anime, I believe, about a sharpshooter, and he's got ridiculous skills.
Like, yeah.
Absolutely bonkers skills. These shots he would be able to do without. What's going on here, which we're going to find out shortly.
Yeah, these are absolutely ridiculous. So one's done, like, on someone driving a boat through incredibly choppy waters. Another one is through a pizza man into the target right as he's opening the door. And the other is right over a manhole that happened to be stopped by a kid losing his balloon at the same time. All of the shots are just remarkably lucky. Like, it goes beyond skill. Like, there's some luck involved here.
Mm-hmm. And not to worry too much about that, though, because Domino hasn't been feeling too lucky ever since she returned from Korea. So she has asked Sage to find all of these and see if there's any connection between all of them. because she feels like her lack of luck might be tied into this.
Yeah, and speaking of Sage, I don't know about this fit.
It gives me strong The Matrix vibes, and not in a good way.
Yeah, this is just Trinity.
Yeah.
I
saw in a later panel, I think this is just what she has under her jacket normally, and I think she should... The jacket just really completes the look. I think she should just have that on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe just keep that on.
Yeah.
Although I kind of like the red glasses.
The glasses are cool. The rest of it, I don't know.
it got swarm in that computer room.
Yeah, I guess so. All the organic plants just really, really heating up in there.
Uh-huh.
But next, we are at a data page of Beast's logbook. And it's about spyware. Apparently, he has been talking to Forge about making organic spy tech that can be used against not only corporations and the Avengers, but also governments.
Yeah. So going back to it, I do just want to make a note of Domino, who is constantly rolling snake eyes here, just instead of like doing the lucky thing. But yeah, on to the spyware Beast logbook thing. I appreciate this data page more than I do a lot of the Percy ones I have recently. I feel like the characterization of Forge here is really good.
Yeah, I kind of like him as this, like, tech bro kind of guy. And Beast is just like, I don't understand what this is, and I'm a little uncomfortable, but you're smart.
Yeah, like, it's... I like hearing this from Beast's perspective as well as seeing him describe Forge, because I feel like you get a really good idea of where both of them are character-wise. Like, Beast just seeing this and being like, I don't know what this dude is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, back when I was in high school, I knew a dude who got, like, into MMA for a little bit, and he was like, hey, can I try out a hold on you? And that just feels like Forge. Like, I've met this kind of guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just being like, hey, man, haven't seen you in a while. Hey, I learned this cool thing.
Yeah.
You want to go for it? Or, look, I made this. Do you want to try it?
Yeah.
So, and it's interesting to watch Beast's kind of spiral here the last couple of data pages, because we haven't actually seen Beast in a minute. We had that issue where he's going through talking about how he's the maestro for this orchestra and is putting everything together, the symphony of death and everything. And then we have him over here being like, yeah, I need to bug the White House. Can you help me out?
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because I feel like he kind of get an idea of where the data page is going for like a little bit, and then it just kind of drops it in the last paragraph that what he's all bugging here. And so it's kind of an interesting little group we got as well. So it's the White House, Roxxon, which is like, I believe, like an evil oil corp.
Yes.
In the Marvel world, Stark Unlimited, you know, Tony Stark's company, and then Avengers Mountain, which is just the Avengers headquarters.
Yeah, so not great. Following in line with the whole CIA aspect of it, though.
Yeah.
It does feel like they're floundering a little. Had they not figured out the bugging enemy governments before this?
I guess not, but I feel like that's also in line with Beast thinking he is way smarter than he is.
Yeah.
Like, is Beast, like, did Beast just woke up one day and realize they did not have bugs?
Yeah.
Which is kind of a fundamental tool of spycraft.
Woke up one morning and just slapped his forehead like, oh, I knew I was missing something.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, so moving on from that, Domino is not having a good day.
No, despite this very odd, kind of comfy-looking plant bed, she's not having very good dreams. She's having actually a lot of PTSD from what she went through and being, you know, flayed alive.
Yep. Sure is.
Yeah, so the insomnia's been kind of getting to her. She's been doing a lot of late-night running. And apparently the insomnia has been getting to Colossus too, who we last saw was badly hurt after they managed to get him out of Russia.
Mm-hmm. Well as a couple of mutant kids that he had saved along the way.
But, yeah, he doesn't seem to be doing too well at the moment either. But it's kind of cool because, I don't know about kind of cool, but these two are able to kind of take comfort in each other, it seems like. And it feels like we got a little budding romance going.
Mm-hmm. I especially like the sequence here where they run into each other on the beach. And they're both like, hey, I heard what happened, you know. You can feel safe here. And Colossus is, you know, in his full metal form, which he doesn't need to be on Krakoa. But she understands that. And that mutual understanding is kind of what gets them through this.
Yeah, and there's also kind of this theme here with Domino where she talks about her scars because, like, she's still been, like, real messed up from, what happened to her in the beginning of X-Force here. But she wants those. She wants to remember this trauma. She wants that to be part of her.
Yeah. I have two parts here about that. But for Domino, it is interesting because, yeah, you start this and she has her inner monologue, which seems to be a really, like, a Percy favorite. He likes to do that.
Oh, yeah, I know. It reminds me of the Wolverine issues a lot way.
Yeah, no, it gave me big Wolverine vibes. But Domino here, when she starts her monologue, it almost seems like you're going to come to the conclusion that, oh, she really doesn't wish this happened to her and wishes she could not have it, you know? But by the end of this conversation, she says, hey, I know this is tough, but this was for Krakoa, and I'd rather keep these scars than forget them and forget what I'm fighting for, you know?
Right.
But also, the other thing, when I first read this and you get to the shot of Colossus, you know, on fire, and it's kind of this big shot to be like, hey, when he was in Russia, it was really bad. There's tanks and soldiers. I thought I had missed something and that there was an issue I had skipped where it explains what happened to Colossus in Russia. It's just not, you know, it's only ever alluded to. We're just kind of told, hey, it was bad.
Right. Yeah, at this point, we have not seen what has actually happened in Colossus there. Like, I think this is the most that we've gotten.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other than seeing him at the end of it and told he was attacked, this is about the most of it.
Right. He's got a cool-looking painting here, though.
Mm-hmm. Good use of reds, I gotta say. Very nice. It's a face of some kind. I don't know whose face, but it's very well done. So,
but yeah.
Yeah, the two of them, you know, part ways, you know, realizing that, hey, we do this for Krakoa, even though the nightmares don't stop. And next, we jump right back into a data page of Beast's logbook again, and this time it's about a scrap of paper that apparently spoke to him because he's very aware of these things. And he found this scorched, very high-quality piece of paper, and on the bottom of it is just a simple word in Russian. When I tried to translate it, the closest word I got was chronicler. So that seems to be what that word is.
Okay, yeah, I was going to ask because I thought about doing so and I was like, I don't know how to do that. And then,
yeah, Google has like a translation feature you can get on your camera now. It's really cool.
Oh, that is neat. Yeah. Yeah, less high on this data page than the first one. It's fine. Just paper.
Mm-hmm. This is one of those things that having read everything past this, it kind of helps because I'm like, oh, okay, here's where the seed started. Here's where the little bit of story is kind of planted and then it'll be picked up later on. This is one of those, but it's not picked up on for a while. So I'm surprised to see it this early.
Yeah. But yeah, so after this, we get another assassination. It looks like just one of the Order of X guys has been shot.
Mm-hmm. And the shot was from a moving motorcycle two blocks away, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, this one looks like a less impressive situation than the others, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Moving motorcycle. And also, it's kind of interesting because like the targets are definitely pro-mutant figures, but it's like, this is a dude that's probably seen as a relative nut job to anyone outside of this cult. So it's interesting that this guy was on the assassination list. It really is just kind of anyone who's pro-mutant.
Yeah, regardless of how much of a sway that they seem to have.
Right.
Yeah, maybe the schedule just lined up.
Yeah, like, possible. You know, I'm in the area. Like, let's get this order, like, this weird cult guy.
Mm-hmm.
Just out here in his black hood.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
But this seemed to be, you know, kind of the first failure, I guess, on the assassin's part. Because Sage and Domino do find out about this kill, and Sage then does the math and is able to figure out that the assassin is moving from east to west, and also gives a likely next target that the assassin might hit.
Yeah, I love this panel here where Sage just has all these like math equations like around her. Reminds me of that scene in the Hangover with the card counting.
Sure. I can see that.
Yeah.
This does end up making not much sense given a revelation we get later. But I'll mention when we get to that.
I wonder if you're thinking what I'm thinking. So yeah, definitely bring that up. But this next venue that they have decided that is maybe a target is in Tahoe at the Sierra Institute. There is a kind of a conference going on that's going to discuss this new mutant paradigm that's kind of arrived. Domino is there to protect a Professor Elise Irene Owsley, who apparently kind of predicted that this would happen.
I want to just talk about this building for a second. This is a James Bond-looking building here.
Oh, this whole next couple of pages, 100% James Bond.
Yeah, like, I have to imagine that was a big influence here, because this is, this gets a little silly. But yeah, it's just some crazy-looking building up in the mountains that's apparently just, like, somewhere they have conferences.
Mm-hmm. Ski resort conference center. There's a casino nearby, too. It sounds like a nice place, actually.
Yeah.
So, but they did guess correctly, because the assassin is there and is going to take a shot at the professor, but Domino is able to save her at the very last second. Domino then jumps out the window and gives chase to the assassin on a snowboard, as the other is on skis, and they have this really fun downhill chase going on.
Yeah, like,
this again, is fantastic. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Just straight James Bond. Also, like, uh-huh. On the snowboard, she uses her plant arm to yank a snowboarder off the snowboard and then takes it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You said, it's the classic James Bond of like, oh, sorry, I need to borrow this.
Yeah.
So, but I agree. Really fun sequence. A lot of fun movement here. You know, good shots to the next page where they're like full panels. They're shooting at each other. It's just a lot of fun. I have no other way to put it. I really like these.
Yeah. Yeah, I love how the snowboard gets exploded into two parts, and then she just continues using those as skis.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Uh-huh.
She eventually manages to shoot out the assassin's gun while saying the line, "That's right, I'm still here, I'm your snake eyes," which just goes like, that's a good line. That goes hard.
It does, but at the same time, there's a part of me that groans. I'm like, that's pretty cheesy. But also, I'm into it, so hey, you know what? You can do it.
It's cheesy, but I like how it's set up earlier, and it's just, it works. Like, mm-hmm. I like the idea that her luck is bad enough to offset the good luck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they kind of, like, cancel each other out.
Right.
So, but speaking of that casino from earlier, they have now arrived at the Big Woods Casino, where apparently this cape parka combo is very common here, because there's a lot of people that now look like the assassin walking around.
Yeah.
But we do get a glimpse of the assassin before they escape, as they help this old lady with her final push at the slots and get her to win big, and it is revealed at the end that this assassin is actually a reverse Domino.
Yeah, it's like Domino, but the color scheme's backwards. Palette swap.
Mm-hmm. And that brings us to the end of our issue here for number 7.
I like the idea of, like, Bizarro Domino or Shadow Domino here.
Yeah, it's a cool little... I agree, it's a cool little thing.
I think it's fun. Not my favorite thing in the world. You know, when it was revealed that it's just a reverse domino, I was like, okay. That's fun, I guess. It was just kind of a shrug out of me. But Sergio, I did want to ask you, what was your point from earlier?
Oh, that's actually going to... I think it hasn't happened yet.
Ooh, okay. So next issue?
Yeah, next issue.
Okay. All right. That sounds like a good time to jump into that. Are you two ready?
Yep.
Yeah.
These are two issues I'm very glad we're reading back to back, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah, this very much feels like, you know, a single thing.
Yeah.
We pick up right where we left off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a direct continuation, which is really nice. So for X-Force number 8, Game of Dominoes, it's still written by Benjamin Percy and was also released in February of 2020. Before we jump into it, though, I do want to comment on the cover. It does do the thing I really don't like in comics, which is, hey, here's your female character with her ass right just staring at everybody in the face.
Uh-huh.
Not the best. Yeah. I kind of wish it was reversed, because that would be funny, where Domino is looking, you know...
Give Domino very the bloody stern. Hand and have Colossus' ass, yeah.
Yeah, and have Colossus' ass just facing everybody. I thought that would be a lot more fun, but, can't have winners all the time. So, but we are picking back up, actually now in London. It seems that Reverse Domino did get away in Tahoe. But she is preparing to murder this pro-mutant legislator as he is waiting for her as she prepares herself in the bathroom.
Yeah, and she's got, like, a garrote wire ear. This is immediately just, like, giving me a... Like, when I first saw this, I'm like, oh, she's like those dudes that they killed at the start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, uh-huh. The meat yep. assassins.
Yeah.
So she walks out of the bathroom ready to kill this guy, but our real Domino is there and is ready to take her out. The two fight very briefly before Domino puts a bullet right through her head and she is done for.
Yeah. She also has a bone knife that she pulls out. But yeah, she gets killed within like 4 pages.
Yes, of being revealed. It's very fast.
Did their luck kind of cancel each other out? And this is why Domino got the upper hand in the end?
Yeah, I'm guessing that's what happened.
Domino, her power is one of those where it depends on the writer and what's needed for the situation.
Yeah.
You know, you can argue that Domino should not have been captured by Zeno in the first place because she should have been lucky enough not to, but it still happened. So it's not totally rigid how her power totally works.
Yeah, but it was established in the last issue how she was super unlucky and this other girl was, like, had siphoned her power pretty much.
Yeah.
So I didn't expect her to, like, get the better of Bizarro Domino so quickly.
Yeah, because she puts her down like real quick. I'm honestly not sure how it works. I feel like when you get into luck-based powers, it just gets very, very confusing very, very quickly.
Yeah, and then later on we're getting some very silly logic about how the luck effect is kind of like gravity around Domino's body or something. Like, so maybe they just cancel each other out.
I'm okay with that. You know, maybe when they're on their own, they, you know, this fake Domino has the stronger luck and real Domino has the bad luck. But when they're actively trying to go against each other, that's when it balances out.
Yeah. Sure. And like, if it's just like skills based, like this is, you know, Domino has been in special forces for a while and this other person is, I'm guessing, just some random meat puppet. So like, I'm not shocked Domino could get the better of her just based on skills.
Yeah, and I think it's also, you know, with this meat puppet, meat assassin, whatever you want to call her, you know, she was so focused on killing this legislator that she did not go for the fight. She was very single-minded in that fact. If the two had actually fought one-on-one, I'm not sure how it would have gone.
Right. But, with that, we're back at the Healing Gardens.
Mm-hmm. And Reverse Domino is very dead and, you know, dissected here, which is very gross. But we do get the confirmation that she is built similarly to those assassins from earlier. The same adrenal glands, reinforced bones, explosive putty in the teeth, you know, all of it's here. It's clearly the work of the same person. And this likely means that there's probably more of these fake dominoes out there.
Yeah.
And this is what I meant by something wrong with the logic they used to track this one down. Were they just dormant? Because they kind of figured out that she was coming here because she was moving from like west to east or whatever. So was she the only one doing hits at the moment?
From what I took it, I think she was the only one they had active in the field.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
you know, they could have waited a couple of days till they had another one so they could confuse whoever was tracking them.
Yeah, that probably would have been the smarter call. Just have, because they have a lot. Like,
they have a lot, and they do not seem to be like fresh out of the bat.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
No, they're actually, you know, they look pretty good, all things considered, when we do see them. Yeah, a couple more business days probably would have helped, but maybe they also had a deadline where they're like, hey, we got to get these things out of here. Can you at least send one out?
We really got to kill this cult leader right now. Like, we need to get this done.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of disjointedness in having one issue be focused on this mysterious, super capable sniper assassin, and then, you know, just throwing them away within the first four pages of the next one and revealing there's a bunch of them.
In true James Bond fashion.
Yes, actually, I would agree with that. And I feel like Reverse Domino was the big, you know, stinger at the end of the last one, but I don't think this conjoined story is necessarily about her or Domino losing her luck. I think it's more about Domino as a person.
Yeah, it is very weird to, like, just do away with it so quickly, but I do agree. It's this is basically just a Domino story here.
So, but speaking of what Sergio was talking about, there is this anecdote that Domino mentions that ever since she was little, she's always found four-leaf clovers everywhere because of her luck, and she's now started to find them again. So that likely means killing this one assassin has brought back her luck power. Seems to be, you know, a good thing. She just needs to go murder some more, but that should be easy for her.
It's very video gamey, the logic being employed here.
Yeah, I love where this ends up going. It's just,
I do too, because it's that, but on an absurd scale.
Yeah. So Domino's taking a swim here, and we kind of get an inner monologue about how, you know, she enjoys being in the water for a little bit until she has to resurface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mostly to quiet her anxieties and worries, because, you know, her ex gene was weaponized now. They have turned her into a weapon again, and she's having trouble with it still. But when she surfaces back up, our good friend Colossus is there again. However, he's not as positive this time. Instead, he offers to basically drag both of them underwater so they both can die and reawaken through the resurrection process with hopefully these horrible memories taken from them.
Yeah, and Domino is very against this. It feels like two people kind of, again, I feel like this relationship is two people kind of confronting or comforting each other in like trauma, but they have two different ways to look at it here, where Colossus, I think, would rather it just be gone, where Domino wants to have these scars, wants to remember this pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. And I really like this relationship. I don't know what relationship Colossus and Domino had prior to this. I assume they were close on some level, since, you know, they're pretty close here. But I kind of like this, you know, bonding over trauma moment that they keep having.
Yeah, I will say those are probably my favorite bits in these two issues.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I guess we have another assassin.
Yeah, Sage calls up Domino and says that they have some footage here of a guy who has the same looking skin that Domino has go up to a gate in Russia, try it, and then walk away, all without being harassed by any of the tanks or guards nearby. So presumably, probably with the Russian military.
Or very lucky.
Or very lucky.
One of the two.
But the more important thing here is Sage had an idea. Taking the shape of a four-leaf clover and considering how rare this is, she designed a quantum computing program to find mass amounts of four-leaf clovers in Russia or around mm-hmm. Russia, and found a bunch of them along the Trans-Siberian Railway going through that area.
Boo.
Oh, come on. It's so silly.
It's so bad. Yeah. This makes no sense.
Hey, look, she used that, the...
That's as good an explanation as Apocalypse's ramblings.
It's just magic, man.
There's just clovers that just spawn when Domino is near them.
Mm-hmm. So if you ever need to find her, pull up this program that can detect four-leaf shapes anywhere in the world, and you will find Domino.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, I bet it would suck to be Domino and want to like be a gardener, because you would just keep popping up four-leaf clovers all the time.
I'm Team Clover here. This is hilarious to me.
I am also Team Clover because I think this is so silly.
It's terrible. I cannot abide by it.
Domino's mere presence causes clovers to spawn.
That's not what bothers me so much as the ridiculous technobabble here.
Oh, yeah. It's... Oh, man, what are the lines? The
multifoliate trait is often triggered by environmental factors.
Yeah, well, I mean, also... Wait, hold on. The four-leaf clover makes the shape of a square, the three-leaf a shape of a triangle. These are uncommonly tidy organic features and easy shapes to sensitize a scan to. When I quantum program the satellite feeds, I find a massive proliferation of four-leaf clovers here in Russia. And it's like, what? Quantum program a satellite feed? Like, what?
Yeah, to find, you know, squares and triangles in this certain order, I'm pretty sure you would find a lot more in other things, too.
Yeah, probably.
So, but with the direction this story is going, especially coming up, we've kind of veered into the territory that I feel only comic books can really pull off, especially Cape comic books, which is just this level of suspended reality that's like, yeah, sure, okay, I'll go with it. That's weird, but sure.
You gotta love a train heist, though, which is what we're getting here.
I do really like this train heist. I
don't know if I do, but we'll get into it.
Okay. I will say I do. But since they do find that these four-leaf clovers are all around this railway, they assume that where these dominoes are, or whoever is making these dominoes, is likely on a train. So they hide a Krakoan seed on a neighboring train. Colossus and Domino go through it and have to make a very calculated jump to their target train in order to see if they're correct or not.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's a neat-looking page here.
Mm-hmm. A fun-looking page, you know, some very silly lines from both of them. A nice comment here from Domino that, you know, she has been moving ever since she got back, but ever since Colossus got back, he's kind of stayed still. In fact, this is his first time back in Russia since everything happened, which is a little odd for him, considering he is from Russia and is pretty close to that side of him, I would say. But he seems to have dropped all of that for Krakoa. And probably for a good reason, too, because he opens a hole into this train and they drop into a massive train car full of blood.
Yeah, it's the blood car. They dropped into the blood car.
It's my favorite. My favorite is the blood car because it's just so silly. It's just like, oh, you know, what do the bad guys have? They have a train full of body parts and blood.
Yeah.
This blood doesn't seem to be, like, in a container.
No. And
this-
Yeah, no,
does
it doesn't
not seem to be a suitable container.
No,
it's just there.
It feels like they took a regular train, like it's not like a train car, like filled with gasoline or something, like you know, a shape that would make sense. It's just a train car, like if they took like a passenger car and filled it with blood.
I kind
or
of
like
thought...
a.
Go ahead.
like a boxcar or something, and it's like, that's not what I would store blood in.
No. like, this is not good at all. In fact, there are chunks in the blood. I'm pretty sure that's not good either.
I can't tell if they're chunks or bubbles, but either way, it doesn't look great.
I kind of hope Percy's note on this when he sent in the script was just train car full of blood, and this is what came out of it. Yeah. And they're like, you know what? Sure, ship it like that. So Colossus punches his way through the blood car into the body part car, as there are a lot of domino experiments here in jars. You've got hands, faces, spines. Not a good time.
I would have expected it to flood a lot more with the hole they made here, but like it's fine.
It's fine. And maybe the blood car is rather self-contained in a way we don't understand. But that's not the big problem. The big problem is they are now being rushed by a dozen plus domino goons. A bunch of guys with guns and knives and swords, some ladies with some guns. We've gone full silly at this point.
I count 17.
Yeah, it's a lot.
If you look at the next panel, there's even more.
Yeah.
It looks like there's a whole, like a whole train car full, chock full of these dominoes.
It feels like some just like, it's like some World War Z zombie physics here. It's...
What were they doing in that car?
I don't know. Like, were they just hanging out?
I would assume just hanging out and, like, standing there, you know? Just, you pack all the dominoes in the car. You got the blood car. You got the body part car.
Yeah.
You can see the blood still on the last car.
Oh, you can!
Just...
That's awesome.
The physics of it makes no sense because you have a hole...
Yeah, like what? Like,
the bloods are still in the car.
Wouldn't the blood come into the body part car?
Nah, no. Don't worry about
it. Yeah, like,
it's actually yellow.
I don't understand how this train works. Like,
it's
laid this out.
It's the villain train.
I don't know, Peacock Man. I don't know about this. I don't know about this train decision here. Why did you have?
He goes to the villain group and he's like, guys, I have this amazing idea for a train. Who wants to pay me?
Yeah, so in the middle of this fight, and like it's a nice looking look here, but Colossus rather fast jumps out of the train to the other, like, you know, the side of the train that's moving forward, and just gets in front of it and crashes the whole train with the dominoes inside.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Including our domino.
And, like, just...
On the second panel of this page,
yeah.
I count 38 dominoes.
That's a lot of dominoes. Oh, man. And I assume because there's 38 in there and there's clearly more coming out of the train car, that there is more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, I just noticed Colossus rips one's head off.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes.
And to be fair, this is a lot of dominoes. The decision to just immediately get out of the train and do this and having it work seems just very, very sudden.
Yes. one could say very lucky.
Yeah, and then we get our next scene and Domino is dying. And yeah, I don't know. Like... This whole thing felt like it got real rushed real quick.
It
yes.
It definitely did, because now all the dominoes are dead. You know,
problem
that problem
solved.
Yeah, the problem is now solved. Hey, good job, you guys. I don't know. I agree it's very fast. I still enjoyed this a lot because it's really fun. You know, logic thrown out the window, sure. It's just, I don't know, good time.
It feels like Percy ran out of room.
Yeah. I don't know where he would add more room. Maybe more into, like, different train cars. But
yeah, it does maybe, go very quickly. Maybe cut down the Clover explanation a little bit.
That was a good couple of pages.
But yeah, so the Domino's death scene here is her asking Colossus here to... make sure that she keeps all of her scars and her memories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for when she is brought back, despite what they, you know, what he really wants. You know, she does not want that. So it is a touching, you know, scene here at the end, which is nice. But we are immediately going to jump into something else as we are back at Xeno in this shadow headquarters where everybody wears masks and talks to each other about blood cars. And our friend, the man with the peacock tattoo, unfortunately does have to explain that their train full of dominoes is now gone. And somebody off to the side is not happy about this because they paid a lot of money. And they are not happy with the fact that their money just got stopped by a giant man made of metal.
Make better investments. I don't know what to tell you. Like,
can someone help me? My family is starving. What should I do?
Did the blood card convince you that this?
The man with the peacock tattoo tells his muscle to basically go quiet this guy down. The muscle is instead thrown back, and I believe his arm is broken. As this man in the shadows says, "Hey, you know what? This democracy thing is not working. I have a new suggestion, one of strength and a declaration of war to make. We don't see who they are, but that is the end of the issue."
Yeah,
that it is.
Mm-hmm. Just kind of a nice little teaser here of what's going to come next now that, you know, the domino plan is done.
Yeah, this I think is a... I don't know if this arc landed for me at the end of it. Like I think the domino stuff is like the strongest part of it, and I do like the personal moments with her. But yeah, I found the army of dominoes and how that's all resolved to be it's a little bit much.
Yeah, I like the first issue a whole lot more than the second one.
Yeah.
Hmm. How interesting. Yeah, because I'm the opposite. I'm big pro blood car, so, you know, can't hide that. But I also do really like the personal moments. I do think that carries this whole little mini arc forward. I do want to see where it goes, you know. Domino currently is dead, assuming she's going to be brought back pretty soon, and then we'll see how she handles her death again. We have Colossus having to, you know, go back to Russia and be attacked again. And whatever's going to happen with Xeno going forward, whoever this mysterious person is.
Yeah, for me, I think the main thing is we've got this very interesting idea about Domino, you know, kind of feeling bad about her powers being siphoned to be used against pro-mutant advocates. Mm-hmm. And then how are they going to deal with that? Were they just going to, you know, destroy all of it and kill everyone?
Yeah.
And there was no redundancy and... this whole idea gets thrown by the wayside because I guess it's just not something we're interested in anymore. So all of the gravity that we got from Domino about, yeah, like having her power siphoned off and being instrumentalized against the mutants is just, you know, solved in like 6 pages, which is kind of disappointing for me. I thought it was a pretty interesting concept.
Yeah, it feels like the interesting parts about the actual mission itself are thrown out the window very, very, very quickly in this second issue. I agree. It just feels like it resolves a little bit too neatly and too quick.
Yeah, it removes a lot of the gravity of the situation for me and all of the internal monologue we get from Domino, which I actually like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I am curious to see what does carry forward here, you know? We don't know if this was all of the Domino information that they had and they just kept it on the car, or if they have it somewhere else. You know, could they make more? Can they not now? We don't really know, so this could be continued later on. But as of, you know, the teaser, it doesn't seem to be as of great importance for Percy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just makes this group so inept.
Yes. Yeah, Xeno. Maybe the Shadow Man can do better at this job than Peacock Tattoo Man, but this is not a good showing for Xeno here. But yeah, so do we want to go on to the giant size X-Men Jean Grey and Emma Frost here?
Sure.
Yes, I do. I learned a whole lot looking into this issue, you know, and everything surrounding it. But Tim, I knew you were excited last time to talk about giant-sized X-Men. Do you want to explain the history besides that title? or behind yes. that title?
Yeah, so the whole giant size X-Men thing, that kind of goes back to Chris Claremont's run in like on the 70s in X-Men. So originally X-Men launched, it was written by Stan Lee back in like the 60s. It ran for probably about like 60 or so issues, and that's where you have like your like Cyclops, Iceman, Angel, that team there. And then it just kind of ended, and X-Men basically went into reruns, just reprinting old issues for a very, very long time, up until 1975 when Chris Claremont took the reins and relaunched it with Giant Size X-Men in 1975. And that was pretty much like that issue is major for X-Men history here. That issue introduced Wolverine to the team, Storm. It kept Cyclops around. You had Sunfire join, Thunderbird. Like, there's a lot of very notable characters that are introduced around that time. That's when Nightcrawler was introduced. So it's a very famous concept, just like in X-Men in general. So like, doing a giant size X-Men is like a callback to that era.
Mm-hmm. It has weight behind the name, you know, when yeah. they say it. Something also I learned is Giant Size X-Men number one is also where Krakoa is introduced as the Living Island, as an enemy.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So that first issue is the original X-Men are kidnapped. Like, I think everybody except for Cyclops is. And so they recruit this new team of X-Men to go to Krakoa to rescue these X-Men.
Mm-hmm. And then Krakoa is just kind of put in on ice for years and years and years until here we are.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Another thing worth noting, I think, based on the publisher's blurb for this issue, is it was kind of designed to showcase artistry.
Yes.
And it shows.
Oh, absolutely. You know, when I was looking all of this up, this giant-sized X-Men was announced as kind of a air quotes reboot. It was announced primarily to highlight artists, like Sergio said, and it was announced as a 5-part series. They were going to be 1 issues for each set of characters. So we start with Jean Grey and Emma Frost. The next giant-sized is Nightcrawler, followed by Magneto, Phantom X, and then Storm. And each one of them has a different artist, I believe, except for Magneto and Storm, I believe, have the same artist attached to them. So, and all of them are written by Jonathan Hickman. You know, he's writing all of them. He just has a different artist with him every time.
Right.
So, but we're going to jump into Giant-Sized X-Men, Jean Grey and Emma Frost, number one. The title of it is Into the Storm. Written by Jonathan Hickman and released in February of 2020.
Also, I want to just a note here. Jean Grey is back to being called Jean Grey instead of Marvel Girl and has a new costume that isn't like a callback to her original one anymore.
Yeah, a lot of callbacks and changes and everything that are going on in this one. I've found that this issue does a lot of like thanks to its history, you know, besides the name for Giant Size X-Men. The way this story is going to flow, just, you know, minor spoilers, is there's almost no dialogue in this entire story. It is all just going to be images and what people are doing. But this is a callback to Grant Morrison's new X-Men run, issue 121, Silence, Psychic Rescue in Progress, was an issue that did the same thing. It had Jean and Emma go into somebody's mind with a similar style that there was no dialogue when they did it. So this is a homage to that.
Yeah, and I have not read that issue, but I have heard that this was a callback to that, which I think is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty cool. I did try to track it down leading up to this episode. I wasn't able to do so. So unfortunately I wasn't able to. I really want to. I might still in the future. Tim, this is for you. It covers Cassandra Nova, which I think is really interesting.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know. I bet it'll still be fun. I don't know how good it'll be. I find Cassandra to be an interesting character. But that's besides the point. So, jumping into this, we open here with two young mutants flying over Krakoa here as they are enjoying the use of their powers when they notice lightning off in the distance and they find Storm collapsed on the ground with blood coming out of her nose.
Just as a quick shout, I want to talk about the paneling here. I really like how this is done. Like, this first panel is... you have, like, a white page, but then you have, like, a flower design that's in, like, the shape of, like, the X-Men logo. And the panels are in the different sections of the X. Just, it's a cool-looking image. It's very striking.
It is nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's those two really beautiful ones, and then you just get the shock of Storm here, you know, very vulnerable, when that's usually not how she is.
Right.
We then cut to a kind of like a nice grove area where there's a tree doorway, and above the tree it kind of zooms in, and there is a bunch of Krakoan text above there. This is also a callback to Grant Morrison's issue, because the Krakoan reads... Silence, psychic rescue in progress.
So here's a question before we move on. Going back to the two kids that discover a Storm in the grove.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe the girl's power?
Oh, it looks like fire feet that she can fly with. It almost looks like her lower body is a jet.
It kind of reminds me of Cannonball.
Yeah.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the different trails you can set up your car with in Rocket League.
Oh my god.
Oh man. That's a cool, I like that mutant power.
I can like hear the noise now.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I feel like she's got a Rocket League inspired power.
Yeah,
there.
It's like a contrail or something. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man, I really hope they have, like, a soccer team on Krakoa that's all with flyers. That would be really fun.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's basically going to be, aside from the end, all of the dialogue for this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I will do my best to describe what's going on. So this is going to be very interesting because, yeah, everything from here going forward is going to be facial expressions. There's a little bit of text that characters will create using either dust or lightning, but it's very, very sparse.
Right.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to your summary of this.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay, I will do my best. But starting off here is something we can easily gloss over, but Jean and Scott here are meeting Logan and Emma as Emma and Jean prepare to go in and, you know, see what's going wrong with Storm. But Jean is holding Scott's hand and then goes up and kisses Logan on the cheek. I don't know if you two thought anything of that.
Yeah, I think it's kind of the thruple thing they got going on here. They all seem kind of cool with it. I feel like Wolverine and Cyclops are just mostly here to be supportive.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I do remember when this first came out and that happened, that confirmed the thruple idea that people had been guessing about ever since the layout of the Summer's Moon Home came out. Because people were like, are they really a thing? Is it all three of them? We're not sure. And then this comes out and it's like, oh yeah, no. They're all three very open about it.
Yeah.
People were deluding themselves if they weren't convinced by that first issue.
Yeah, like that. There's no reason for that room to be interconnected like that other than...
No. No, but also I can understand because there is a lot of... I don't want to say queer baiting because, you know, while this could be under that umbrella because it is, you know, an open relationship, people are used to that where they can see like, oh, maybe there's something more going on here that's not the normal. But until it's actually hard confirmed, you never really know.
I feel like if someone wanted to deny the relationship, even with these panels, they could.
Yeah.
That's true. They very much could.
Like, oh, it's just a friendly kiss on the cheek. And it's like, no.
Nah, man. Uh-huh. Nah. So, but besides their relationship... Jean and Emma enter this flower door, above which is the Krakoan I guess sign would be the good word, that just sends silence. And Emma reinforces this by holding her finger up to her lips to remind them to be quiet. And yep. We do see Storm here, unconscious, wrapped in a blanket of flowers.
Yep, Emma takes a swig of the flask, and off we go into the mind of Storm.
Mm-hmm. I actually thought this flask moment was a little odd, honestly. It wasn't until I saw it side by side to Grant Morrison's, where this is a direct recreation of that issue, where Jean is getting ready, Emma takes out a flask, they look at each other, and then they go in.
Huh. Yeah, I feel like Jean's doing like a little eye roll thing here too, so I can see it.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, Sergio mentioned it, that this is highlighting artists, and the artist here is very, very good. The expressions here are very clear from everybody involved.
Yeah, and then we get like this next page, which is very nice looking. Try to describe this one.
Oh boy. Okay, so we have Jean and Emma, Emma being blue, Jean being kind of like a pinkish purple, as they seem to swirl together and enter this dream space that we find in Storm's mind, what you could call the astral plane, if you wanted to. And
yeah, they're just, you know, navigating the psychic maelstrom into this tree dream.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's a very nice shot here of this massive tree off in the distance. And above it is this logo that's essentially a direct callback to Storm's old headdress that she used to wear. I don't know exactly how I would describe it, but she used to wear it for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
So, but the two of them are here. Emma, you know, seeming to make some sort of a snide mental remark, as I would read it. When suddenly the tree is thrown farther off in the distance and a massive pit opens beneath them. And in this pit are two lions, a lion and a lioness, as they ask the two of them what they mean to Storm.
Yeah, I like the way this is done. I feel like it's very clear on like what they are asking, without like it just being an obvious, like, this is what we're asking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially, like, you know...
Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, especially because there's no dialogue. You know, they can't just ask, yeah, what are you doing here? They have to have a way of asking that, and they use it with their weird eye lightning powers. I don't know how else to describe it.
Yeah, so it's what the design is. It's like it's two question marks and then two addition signs and then like a figure of Storm projected. Yeah, it's nice looking. Although Jean cheats a little bit by like making the word friends out of dust, but it's backwards, so it looks cool. So it gets a pass.
It does get a pass. I'm okay with this, only because it's backwards. If it was going the right way, then no.
Yeah.
So,
but,
it feels to me like that does not work.
No, it does not. Because, yeah, immediately she goes and, like, makes this little, like, dust design of her and Storm hugging.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and in their older outfits as well, I see 80s rocker Storm here in the little dust thing that she made.
Yeah,
I believe the older Marvel Girl costume as well.
Yeah, this looks like, that looks like Mohawk Storm.
Yeah, one of the best Storms, if you ask me.
Yeah, but the lion accepts this, and it kind of smiles here.
Yeah, not a kind of smile. It is middle of the page, going over the panel's smile. It's great.
Yeah. The lioness stares at Emma, and Emma shrugs and makes a dust design of her and Storm fighting. I believe I remember this issue.
I would say it is accurate as well, because those two don't really get along.
Yeah. Like, I think I remember this. I think the fight was very specifically about, like, Kate.
You know, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
You know, if Emma was smart, I think she would have made a scene of her and Storm hugging after Kate passed away, but... eh. Maybe that was too much of a personal moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The lions don't like this too much.
No. In fact, they merge together in this horrifying mass to become this giant spectral snake that immediately grabs Emma and slams her into the ground.
Yep. Cracks the soil beneath her in a pattern that says help.
Oh, wow. I didn't even notice that.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I completely missed that.
Yeah, I've read this a couple of times. And wow, yeah, I never noticed that. That one's really subtle.
Yeah.
So, but it's Gene
like,
is...
Now that I'm looking at it, I'm like, I'm just thinking, how did I miss this? But yeah, it's right there.
Uh-huh.
And...
You know, turns out in the psychic realm, you can still solve issues by just fighting it out and killing the thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you punch it real good, it still works.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so she punches it real good, Gene's does some psychic stuff, and, turns it into an elephant, or do they make an elephant?
No, I think she turns them into one.
Yeah, an elephant with butterfly wings. It's a cool-looking design.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they fly towards the tree. I do have to say, I don't think Emma punching it did much. I think it was Gene just ripping it apart that did all of it, which, oh man, Gene's really scary.
Yeah.
Love Gene to death, but my goodness. So, but they arrive at the tree, and Emma senses that a lightning bolt is coming and protects the two of them with part of the tree. And after they look up, they see Storm's face being made in the clouds above them as they enter into this massive spire.
Yeah, and like her face is formed by the clouds, and it forms like in the headdress thing that was over the... It's really cool looking. Like it like is inside the headdress that was in the air before. But yeah, we've got our crazy looking spiral staircase.
Yeah, going up through this tree where it is nothing but darkness and sketched on eyes on almost every part of this wall. It's very unsettling.
Yeah, I like that a couple of the eyes are used as panels as well. That's neat.
Me too. I actually really like these next couple of pages because it uses panels really well, which it doesn't come across good in a podcast format. So I highly recommend looking at this if you're not looking at it. But as they are walking up the staircase, it begins to fall apart as the eyes glow and shoot lightning between them. And you see the panels kind of falling at an angle with the characters as they're buried underneath the darkness here.
Yeah, this looks great.
Yeah, I love this. And then you kind of get like this glimpse of them fighting through it where they're like pushing against like the darkness of the page.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to reconnect
eventually they
together.
Make it to each... Yeah, they move toward each other where they're able to kind of combine their powers to like bust out of this. It's
yeah, basically
very,
reconstruct
very cool looking.
The staircase.
Right.
Yeah, and it's wonderful. And again, shout outs to the artists because even in I wouldn't say little things like this, like the two of them walking up the remade staircase, you can already get their, you know, personalities through how they're walking. You know, Jean is just curious and more casual. Emma still has her poise about her even as she is going up these stairs. So, but the two of them do reach the top of this tree where they come out on top to the face of Storm in the clouds still above them. As this area full of kind of pink and purple spectral flowers are all overcome by this machine growth that is emitting from this Krakoan egg in the center.
Yeah, so the egg burst apart, and a little flower's there.
Mm-hmm.
And we get like a couple words here. Emma says metal. Jean says a word I can't read backwards.
Machine.
Okay, yeah, machine.
Yeah, essentially them questioning why is there this stuff in her mind.
Right.
And I love this next panel. Where they see the flower, they look at each other, and Emma just kind of shrugs like, I don't know. So the two of them just grab the flower and start pulling at it. And they pull up this massive ring of metal teeth, essentially. And Storm is in the center of it. So she is there, you know, kind of struggling to wake up. And Jean goes up to her and touches her face, you know, to see if she's all right. And as she pulls away her hand... Storm's face comes with it, and we see a metallic, almost robotic face underneath it, with a timer on her forehead.
Yeah, counting down from, it looks like, 29 days.
Yeah, 23 hours, 55 minutes, 46 seconds.
Yeah, so basically just 30 days.
Yeah. Deeply unsettling panel. Do not like it. I don't like this view of Storm's face with just the robotic eye and everything. It's horrific.
Oh, with like the skin like gooing off? Yeah, it's not great.
It's not a good time.
Yeah,
you can see the eyelashes come off the like eye hole as Jean pulls her hand away.
Yeah, which, two, props to the artist. Three,
Yeah,
I think this looks fantastic.
It looks great. Horrifying, but great. This Storm thing makes this little, like, lightning save me in the sky before it seems like fitting out. And Jean embraces her in a hug, and she is joined by Emma not long after, who hesitates a little bit, which I think is cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very in character for the both of them. So, and we go back to the hallway where Wolverine and Cyclops are waiting, and we see Logan look up as the silence in Krakoa finally fades with its light.
I love this. It's like an ER sign going off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, hey,
that's what it's going for.
Yeah. Surgery's done. You know, we're finished. Yeah. So the two of them stand up and Jean and Emma exit the room. And we finally have our last bit of dialogue here as she says, "The children of the vault gave Storm a machine virus that's going to kill her in the next 30 days. We ought to talk."
Yep.
Okay.
That is the end of our first giant-sized X-Men. I have a lot of thoughts. I'm sure, Tim, you have a lot of thoughts. Sergio, what are your thoughts?
It's a real pretty one. I really liked it. Fairly straightforward, full of references, it seems, to things that I do not have the context for. But nonetheless, I enjoyed it a whole lot.
Yeah, I definitely feel like it's the kind of issue that like it does add some more if you can kind of tell like what it's playing like homage to. But I mm-hmm. think it works even on the level of just taking it at face value.
It's just real pretty to look at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like it's visual storytelling in like its purest form. It's very, very good. The artist, I feel like, really had to flex here to make a lot of this stuff work. And they did. It's great.
Yes. And also, yeah, no, definite shout outs to the artist, which is Russell Dodderman. He's credited with the story and the art here, so I'm imagining he worked with Hickman on this one. But yeah, no, beautiful. Everybody's expressions you can read clearly. Everything looks great. The backgrounds, the sky, everything going on is wonderful.
Yeah, like paneling is great. Like it's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, easily great paneling. I always love it when comics play with panels. It doesn't happen that often. I actually just read Young Avengers that played with it a lot because the villain did it.
Oh, yes, yes.
It does. Which was really, really fun. But yeah, it's not something everybody does. So I'm really happy to see it when it happens. But also kind of building off, Tim, what you had mentioned, you know, and Sergio, that knowing more of the background has definitely made me appreciate this a lot more, even though I really did like this issue. When I first read it, I didn't know it was a callback to Grant Morrison or any of that. I couldn't read any of the Krakoan and all of that. It was just like, okay, you know, here's another X-Men thing out by Hickman. I'm going to read it. And I agree. I think you can still go through it without knowing that and still enjoy it. But this issue is interesting because you can put it on its own almost as an art piece. You know, clearly it's the two of them experimenting with what they can do creatively. Like, I imagine trying to plan out and tell a story without dialogue is very difficult. It's not an easy thing to do. So to see it pulled off so expertly and effectively is just wonderful to read.
Yeah.
The final stinger doesn't do much for me. I guess it's just, you know, here's something for more writers to play with in the future. It's not something that the issue itself really engages with. So it's more of a promise of things to come more than anything else.
Like, here's this thing that's happening, but... Yeah, I agree, but I almost feel like it's not, like, the major part of the issue here.
Oh, no, not at all.
But, yeah.
Yeah, they almost could have ended it with them fixing Storm, and I think it still would have worked just as fine.
Right.
You know, that's almost what I mean by it standing alone as its own art piece. It's an experiment in the art form of comic books, and it's just them doing what they can with it. And there's a beauty just in that part.
Yeah, I agree. Of the issues we've read, I think this is my clear favorite.
Yeah, I would be the same, but it almost feels unfair in a way.
Yeah, but yeah, this is almost flexing. Like it's very, yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, very very much a flex. I don't know if it would live up to the giant-sized X-Men history, because the first giant-sized X-Men just sounded like so much of a status quo change that this one doesn't really seem to be. I would rate it as the same higher caliber of storytelling, but I don't know if I would say, like, hey, this is a new starting point for something. That was House and Powers of X.
Yeah, no, that giant-sized X-Men is very, very, very difficult to live up to, because that basically kickstarts, like, aside from this, anything that you know from X-Men was most likely made in that era.
I mean, that was, what, almost 50 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, the last 50 years can be credited to that one comic, which is kind of wild to think about.
Yeah, because that... Claremont ended up staying on the X-Men for, like...
16, 17 years?
Yeah, it was over a decade. But, yeah, anyone else have any more thoughts about this?
Ooh, nothing I don't think we've already discussed, you know. It's just, it's a beautiful issue. I really liked it.
Yeah, very straightforward.
So, but since we are wrapping that up, next time, we are actually going to be taking a bit of a detour from our normal. We are going to be doing a side episode. We're going to cover all of Fantastic Four / X-Men. It was a 4-issue mini crossover that they did where part of the Fantastic Four gets involved with the X-Men for a bit. So we're going to have one episode dedicated to that where we read all 4 issues and then talk about it. And then after we do that, we'll go back to our normal scheduling.
Yeah, so this mini, I believe, is technically not a Krakoa book, but it feels like a Krakoa book.
Yeah, because it kind of covers some pretty big pieces of Krakoa, and also a very, very important mutant.
Yeah. So we will get to that soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm definitely... Yeah,
looking forward to that.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to getting back to that, and definitely looking forward to see what you think of it, Sergio. Do you know much about the Fantastic Four?
The basics, I would say.
Okay, so roughly the same as the X-Men, you know, when you started?
Yeah, I would say maybe a little less, mm-hmm. But not so much that I don't know, you know, the basics of who they are.
Okay. Only one more question, more of a teaser. Did you know Reed and Susan have had children?
I think I do. I... wouldn't be able to name them.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
Has this come up? I feel like this has come up before.
It came up in, like, the first issue of House of X. But yeah, so Reed and Sue's son, specifically, is the kind of important part here. That's Franklin Richards, who is considered that's an Omega-level mutant, actually. He has the power to manipulate.
Oh, okay. Is it Cyclops who suggests... they should get him to Krakoa?
Yes.
Yeah, that's that.
Yeah, see? I do remember.
Hey, yeah. You do. Yeah. We'll go more into it when we read, you know, this crossover. But think what Jamie Braddock can do in Otherworld, but just being able to do that whenever you wanted and manipulate reality.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay, yeah. That might come in handy.
Just a little bit. So, but wrapping up this episode here, thank you all for joining us as we read through this era of comic books with the X-Men. If you enjoyed this episode, we would like it if you could leave a review on your favorite podcasting app of choice. That would help us reach more viewers and get people to read these wonderful comics with us. If you would like to follow us on any sort of social media where we post, you know, what we're reading next, the reading order, as well as any links or comments that we've used for our episodes, you can find us at Study of X on X, or also called Twitter, and also on Tumblr. If you have any questions, comments, jokes, or anything like that that you would like to send to us that maybe we will read here on the podcast, you can send that to studyofx@gmail.com, and Tim might read it. And if you are looking for me personally, you can find me at Sawneeks, that is S-A-W-N-E-E-K-S, on Twitter, even though I'm not really there all that often. And I also just made a Blue Sky account, so you can find me there as well. And Sergio, if they are looking to find you to ask you more about the Sundial, where can they find you?
Yeah, people can find me at Fireblend on Twitter and Blue Sky and other social media that I'm in. They can also listen to my other podcast, Stray Reads, which is kind of in a hiatus at the moment. I'm hoping we'll record another episode soon. But, you know, there's like 4 pretty good ones in the feed. Go check them out.
Mm-hmm. Highly recommend that. You know, a great look into books that you may have read or may not have read and then want to read afterwards. And Tim, if they are looking for you to find the world's largest and most complicated set of drums, where can they find you?
They shouldn't right now. I'm doing a psychic rescue. I need silence. So just leave me alone for the future.
Got it. Okay, we can do that. Actually, you know, I think we should start that pretty soon, so we'll start the silence soon. But before that, we'll talk to you later, mutants.
Later, mutants.